Welcome to Mama Mabel's Caregivers Podcast, where stories of compassion and resilience echo through each conversation. I'm your host, Talisa Garcia. Today's episode holds a special place in my heart. In a unique twist, I transitioned from being the voice behind the microphone to the one sharing my own narrative. My first therapist, the insightful Miss Pashonda Pugh, MA, LPC, LCMHC, NCC, and life coach, graciously steps into the interviewer's role, guiding us through the intricate layers of my caregiving experience. Our journey together doesn't end there. As the tides turn, Ms. Pashonda Pugh shares her profound insights with me, returning to my familiar role as the interviewer. It's a dance of perspectives, an intimate exchange of roles that brings to light the multifaceted nature of caregiving. Join us for this intimate and enlightening conversation where the lines between caregiver and cared for blur, revealing the deep human connections at the heart of caregiving. Don't miss this exploration of empathy, resilience, and the power of helping others. Check it out. Hello and welcome. I'm glad that you are in the room with us on today. Today, I am speaking with Ms. Pashonda Pugh. She is a licensed therapist. Ms. Pashonda Pugh, please tell the social media family and podcast family your handles and how to find you.
Good afternoon. My name is Pashonda Pugh. I'm a licensed professional counselor. I'm nationally certified, and I'm licensed to practice in both North and South Carolina. You can find me on Facebook and on Instagram under Life Transitions Wellness Center. My email address will be ppuglifetransitions@yahoo.com. My website for the office is www.lifetransitionswc.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that, Pashonda. This, number one, really means a lot to me to have you here with me on today, as you were the first therapist that I saw after I had lost my beloved mother. And so the time that you spent with me and, you know, worked with me and dedicated time and extra time to me and where I was at during that phase and that stage of brokenness, I will never forget. So from my heart, I sincerely want to say thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's go. Let's just dive right on in.
Okay, so Talisa, tell me a little bit about your experience as a caregiver for your mom once you found out that she was sick.
Okay, so my mother was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer in November of 2016. Mm-hmm. She went in just because she had a blood clot in her lung. This would happen to her often, which started back in 2007. But this time the doctor said, well, you know, let's run some tests to see what's going on. So they ran some tests and they found out that she had breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And when this was discovered, my mother called me and she told me, she said, Lisa, I have been diagnosed with breast cancer. I began to cry right away. Mm-hmm. And my mom said, she said, Lisa, she says, stop. She says, don't cry. I need you to be strong. Mm-hmm. My mama said, Lisa, I just don't want to cheer anyone else up when I'm the one that's going through this, when this is happening to me.
Yeah.
So I stopped crying and I made a promise that I would not cry. Mm-hmm. That was November of 2016. I wanted to go back for Thanksgiving, but you know, plane tickets were crazy. Mm-hmm. And mom said, well, you know, no, Lisa, no, you don't have to come back. Come back in December. Mm-hmm. And, you know, spend some time. I said, okay, cool. So I came back in December and it was my first time, December of 2016, first time seeing my mom. Mm-hmm. And I still, you know, had to honor what she said. I just wanted to grab her, hug her, cry. But I was, you know, I didn't. Instead, I saw her. Of course, I took her grocery shopping. I cooked some meals for her. Mama decided she wanted to follow the Dr. Sabi's type diet, alkaline thing.
Yeah.
So That's what we did. In addition to that, as soon as I found out my mom had stage four breast cancer, understanding that there is no stage five, I just began to pace the floor, constantly pacing, because I was thinking, well, how can I fix this? What can I do? What can I implement? And I started researching. I got D3 vitamins because I found out that there's some type of correlation with a lack of vitamin D and breast cancer. I even purchased her a portable sauna because it was infrared, and infrared was supposed to help kill cancer cells. Anything that I could think to do, I did. I started making her my body butter, which I now sell as Mama Mabel's body butter. I had always made it for myself, but I started giving it to my mom because it was natural. I purchased her things. I made her natural deodorants. As she began to lose weight, I purchased her clothes. I was down south. I wanted her to come and live with me. However, my mother felt that she had to stay up north because there were other relatives that she felt that she needed to take care of. I was angry about that because I'm like, hey, I'm the baby. And if I'm the baby and 33 years old at the time, these other people that are a lot older than me should be able to take care of themselves. I'm like, come down. But my mom said, no, not until this relative had a place to stay. So my mother stayed up north working doubles to support, this relative. While that's going on, I'm down south. I'm paying bills down south for me. I'm paying bills up north for mama. I'm researching things. I'm constantly buying things from Amazon and shipping that up to her, almost every day. I'm calling, I'm checking on her. Something great that we used to do is we would do affirmations together. So this helped mama when she felt like she couldn't make it and she was having a hard time. Every morning, we would do affirmations. So I would say it and then mama would repeat it. And there would be some days that mama would cry, that my mama would cry. And she said, Lisa, I said, Mama, I got you. I said, we'll do this together. Come on. I am this. I am strong. I am able. I still have the list of affirmations that we would do together. Anything I could think to do, I did. So when my mother finally told me, she says, well, Lisa, I'm ready. I'm going to move down south with you. I was very happy, but my mother was a bit hesitant due to the fact that she did not want to be a burden and she did not want to get in the way. She realized that at the time, the corporation I was working for, I was unhappy. I was working with a headhunter at the time. I was looking at other opportunities and I was looking to relocate to a different state. And mama didn't want to get in the way. I was living in an apartment at the time, going month to month, which I was paying more month to month than I do on my mortgage to let you know how ready and serious I was about moving. I told mama, I said, you are the most important person in the world to me. I'll take care of that later. My focus is on you. So when mama agreed, I got excited. I started looking for a house to buy as a gift to my mom. The realtor that I had at the time wasn't the best. Say that for another day. The realtor told me, she said, well, Talisa, I feel like you're being picky and you want everything to be perfect. The realtor said, Talisa, you're being, very picky. You should just do new construction if you want everything to be perfect. I looked at her with a blank look on my face because I was thinking, and I said, you're right. Only the best for my mom. That's exactly what I will do. So I did that. And I let her customize it. Everything was what she chose because this was my gift to her. I moved my mother down in May of 2017. It was over the Memorial weekend. And when I went to see her, I was really hurt. I was hurt and I was angry because every day I would call my mom, we would talk multiple times a day, which we had been doing since I left for college. And I had not lived in the same state with my mom for like 17 years because straight out of college, I started working for my first corporation and then being relocated to this state, to that state, doing this, doing that. I was always gone. I went to go see my mom and she walked as if she had a really bad case of osteoporosis. She was slumped over. She was in a lot of pain. And I was upset because I'm just like, why didn't anyone tell me? For the people who saw her, who dealt with her, who knew me, How come no one thought enough of my mother and me to give me a phone call? That's number one. Number two, because my mother was such a huge, I'm a giver. People who knows me knows that I am a giver. But my mother was like me, but on steroids with it. Okay. So, which I'm not like that, but I'm a huge giver. So there were people there, like, who would even try and make her responsible for being their transportation to various church events. My mother was a church lady. She really was. She just tell you a bit about her. Mama, her name was Mabel. Mama Mabel. All she did was she worked, she went to church, and she tended to her girls. That was it. She didn't smoke, drink, curse. She didn't party. I would play music from the 70s from her, some of my favorite songs. And I wasn't even born in the 70s. And mama wouldn't know what it was, the music. But if I turned on some gospel music, it didn't matter like what era, mama knew it. She rocked with it. That was her thing. She was a great lady, just very loving, very kind. But when you are a giver, you have to have boundaries because takers don't have boundaries. So seeing her in that state, I was upset. I was also upset that her place was a mess. She told me she was packed and ready to go. Her place was a mess. I was upset, especially being that she had a relative, a blood relative that was living with her. The main purpose of her being where she was to take care of them. I looked at it from the standpoint of what have you done to take care of my mother? And I was upset about that. I asked my mom, I said, why didn't you tell me? Why didn't you talk to me? And mama told me, she said, Lisa, you just do so much. That's what she said. Y'all, I'm not a parent. I do not, as of today, and it has been over 6 years later, I still don't know what that means. But I said, okay, I began to help pack the car, and I would go outside, and I just bawled my eyes out. I cried because I'm having to accept how my mom is physically, accept some of the things that she was going through that was never communicated to me, and upset with just various people across the board that knew the condition my mother was in, but still tried to use her for things, and no one reaching out to me. So mama came down, and I did everything. I loved her. And I did it with a smile on my face. Although it was hard because I was watching my mother, I was slowly watching my mother die. And it was happening pretty fast. Everything I cooked for her was from scratch. Anything she wanted, I gave her the best. On Fridays, we would do, because she wanted to do the Dr. Sabies things, but on Fridays, she would have whatever she wanted. But even the things that she wanted, I gave her the best. She said she wanted a cheese pizza. I went to one of the places that makes the best cheese pizza that they had. Mama needed saltine crackers. I went to the store and got the most expensive type of pumpkin, some kind of crackers with, poppy seeds and flex seeds and just everything I did. When mama wanted toast with butter on it, I put, the butter on it, and I would sprinkle like special seeds. She took pictures of. She just kind of cut her eye at me, and she'd be like, girl, she would say, girl, you and this foo-foo. That was her way of saying snooty food. And I really wasn't being snooty, I promise you. I was just trying to make sure that everything I did was done in excellence because I loved her so much. When the time came, I also got CNAs. I had CNAs and I had nurses there. It was hard watching her, like I said, health go down. She would wake up in the middle of the night screaming in pain. I would have to try and find her medication. She wouldn't put her medication in a specific place. So imagine you finally close your eyes, your mother's screaming, you jump up and you're looking for medicine. Where is it? She's like, hurry up, and I'm trying to find it. And she's getting upset with me but I don't know where it is because she didn't tell me where it was. She had put it, she doesn't remember where it was. So I mean, it was difficult. It was difficult. Being that I couldn't cry in front of her. So I cried in the shower. I cried when I walked my dog. I cried when on my way to work. I cried in between going to different accounts because I was an account manager. I cried so much, but just never in front of her. So that was it. I didn't have any help. I was alone. I didn't have alone from the standpoint of this. I was 33, 34 at the time. I was the first one. I am the first one out of my friends to lose a parent. I am the first one out of my friends and et cetera, loved ones to become a caregiver. I was a caregiver for my mom. I didn't have anyone to pull from. And the people who had experience that was older than me, they didn't reach out. They didn't check on me. They didn't, none of those things. And of course, I went through things with relatives. I thought certain relatives were good in just a certain way, but I also ran into some family drama, learned about jealousy, learned about that they had from my mother and from me. It was a lot. It's all I wish I had at the time was someone who could have spoken wisdom to me because I wasn't at a place where I could read a book. I love to read, but my mindset, everything was happening so fast, and I am the kind of person who does her best to stay in front of the ball. Everything was happening so fast. There was no way for me to really prepare for it. There wasn't a book for me to read fast enough to try to incorporate some best practices. There wasn't anyone who was talking to me who had experienced it that was older that was able to share some wisdom. I didn't know that at that time I should have been in counseling. Counseling came after I lost my mother. So that's where I was, and that's some of the things that I did for my mom.
Well, it's been my experience when we are overachievers, such as you are. You've had a lot of experience, you've been a lot of places. We tend to go to what we know, which is to try to be the fixer.
Yeah, and that's what I was. Yeah.
And it becomes a really hard thing sometimes when we have to face a situation where we can't fix
You hit the nail right on the head because, ooh, didn't know that I would cry like this. But what I will tell you is, until that point in my life, I had always been able to fix it. Whatever. I had always been able to take an alternative path, go around the situation, come up with a different idea. And I would think and I would think and I would think until I was actually able to come up with something. But I could not fix this. And that was something that I actually had to deal with. And we dealt with it in therapy and even learning about where that comes from. Because I wanted to fix this desperately bad. Desperately bad. But I just wasn't able to. I just wasn't able to.
Well, I do want to offer you again just grace in knowing that what you did for your mother, was everything that she needed in that time.
Thank you.
Because, the reality is we weren't supposed to be able to fix it. It's a hard pill to swallow, it's just the reality of the situation. With you saying that you were alone, what do you think we need to be doing for people who are we around, who are in our circle, who we come across, who are caregivers? What kind of assistance should we be offering?
And that's a great question, and that's why I have created it because I now I'm on the other side of all of this. Being a caregiver of going through the life lessons that I went through, even with the relatives that I had, I have forgiven everyone. And forgiveness is also something that's deep. We may need to hit on that one day because it's a whole different level of forgiveness when you have to forgive people who have already transitioned because you don't get a chance to have that conversation. You're not able to reconcile in any way. And when people have done you wrong and they know they've done you wrong, and then they leave this earth with that wrong, and you're still here, is how do you really forgive and move forward? But I went through that stage as well, and I've made it over. I'm grateful for all of that. What I have done on a smaller scale, anytime I see people, I'm pretty free spirited off of the clock. Whenever I meet people, even strangers, they tell me their stories, And I share with them what I can about what I have learned. As that time has passed, I have had friends who's lost their parents or ones that have taken on becoming a caregiver. I shared my experiences with them because what I come to learn, Pashonda, is that it's not about me. That happened to us. It's not just about the specific person. And the reason for that is because we're all connected. We're all connected. So with this happening to me and being the kind of person that I am, I've always been that kind of person who loves to share. If I have something great, I will share. It could be a cookie, which I've just done this. Called somebody was on the phone with me, having a good conversation. They called to check on me. And next thing I know, I'm chewing on this cookie and I'm like, oh, this is so good. What's your address? I'm sending you this. Like, I'm that person. At the same time, whenever I learn something, I'm also that person who loves to share it. And the reason why I help others is because what I went through was hard. And there are people who don't make it through the things that I experienced and that I have been through. And so, how do I take that knowledge and that information that I have and share it with others and create a safe space for them to share how they feel and also to learn? Where I was at the time, and I love to read, but everything was happening so fast, I was not able to pick up a book and read it. That's not where I was mentally. However, if there had been a resource like a podcast to give me some things to think about, I would have been able to incorporate those things. So me speaking on my experience and me creating a platform for others to share their experience as well as best practices, I believe will help others. And that's what it's truly about.
I think it's a wonderful thing that you said to realize that, a lot of times the experiences that we have is just not a single, a solitary situation. It's not always for us. It's sometimes for us to be able to help the next person that comes along. So with that being said, what do you want to achieve with your podcast? How do you want to help everyone?
That's a really good question, Pashanda. And by the way, podcast family, none of these questions have been written down or rehearsed. This is just all 100% real, 100% real. So, what my goal is, and what my desire is to again just to create a space for people, so that they are able to share and also to learn from each other. My mother had breast cancer, that just boom, pretty much out of nowhere. But there are other people who are caregivers for their loved ones who are working through different diseases. What is your experience like? What have you found that helped you? What is it that you can share that can help somebody else along their journey? I've experienced it. My mother has transitioned. I am a believer. And so I know that she's in my heart of hearts, I believe that she's on the other side, smiling down from heaven. That portion of me being a caregiver with her has been completed. But now that I have all of this information, what am I supposed to do with it? Do I hold on to it and say, oh, well, I went through it, let someone else figure it out. They had to go through it too. I'm not that kind of a person. I'm the person that says, you know what? I went through this. This is what I found to be hard. This is what helped me, and I will keep you in my prayers if there's any kind of information that I could give you. Now, I'm not the friend of the person to hit up for $20 or more. That's not my ministry. But I will say I am that person that if I have information and knowledge to share, I will share it. So that is my goal, and that is my desire, is to sincerely help others who are going through this, becoming a caregiver for the first time. That's as simple as that is. That's really it, to create a space for them, because I couldn't find this space when I needed it. And I was alone. I don't really think I was alone. I don't think people really get what I'm saying. I was alone. I didn't think I would be, but learning how people are when you're not around your family. I grew up in Michigan. I've been away for over 17 years. So I was not able to see what's been going on a day to day. I didn't know I would visit my mother as often as possible. I would fly her out to come and see me. You know, she was, of course, she was my world, but I didn't realize everything that was going on around her because I wasn't there to observe it. So, yeah.
Well, and since working with you, I have, also lost loved ones. It was a very similar situation with diagnosed with stage four cancer, and the time frame from diagnosis to transition was very quick.
Can you share more on that? Who was diagnosed? What's your story?
My fiance, we had been together for numerous years. I don't want to say the number of years, but it was a lot of years we'd been together. He was a athlete. He played semi-professional football, very active person, overall very healthy person. He started having some stomach issues and stomach pains that, when we went to the hospital initially, they just told him it was, hernia. Ironically, though, they never checked him. They never did a full examination of anything. They kind of just triage you out. When you go to the emergency room, a lot of times, especially the middle of the night when they're overloaded, they kind of rush you through. After him just working through and keeping going and taking everything in and just moving, living life, we come to find out that he had cancer. He had a rare duodenal cancer. And initially, because of how it presented, they thought he had pancreatic cancer. So that, of course, extremely serious. He didn't even know the stage of the cancer at the time. They actually just told us that it was just that the tumor was, it was an
How did you feel emotionally when you were told, when the doctor shared the limited information that they did share with?
I went into go mode. It was just, we had to, let's see what we can do. Let's start the research. Let's try to figure out what we can do. Let's go through. We ordered Dr. Sabi's book too, and we're out here, we're doing this sour sop tea, and we're, putting everything that we can, as far as holistically to try to change and address it. Of course, being also a believer, we go into, faith and speaking life and being positive. And I honestly, in retrospect, I got tunnel vision because the same as you, I know he was looking to me to watch my reaction. So I know when they were talking to us and things were happening, if I got upset, if I got worked up, then that was going to cause him to be upset. So I had to maintain it. In a way, I had to sort of cut off some emotion to just be able to handle business. So we had a plan and we were just moving. And I really, it's it, all these things happen so fast, and you're just kind of going with the flow. It's still, it's my experience has been is when everything stops. And in those months of grief after the passing, where we have time to go back and replay it, that's when, a lot of the anger and a lot of the oh wows start to happen because I didn't realize at the time. I was just so much in go mode trying to take care of business. We're not thinking about we should have done this or we could have done that or any of those things. It's just when we do the replay in our minds after the fact that we can sort of see and understand better what's going on. And that's why one of the things I've not been ever a gatekeeper, and that's why I'm in the helping profession, is when I come across people now that I've gone through my experience, whenever I see someone who is in this place, whenever I get clients to come through or run into people and they're dealing with a loved one who has cancer, I'm asking the questions that they might not even think to ask. Like, have they staged it? Okay. They have not told you a stage. Okay. Have you had the PET scan done? What hospitals are you going to? What treatments are you doing? And all these things that, as a person who had never dealt with cancer before, I didn't know to ask those questions. I didn't know what I was supposed to be hearing or finding out.
And you were not being provided the information
No.
that you sincerely needed and deserved to have.
Well, and what I found is a lot of times when we are working with medical professionals, because this is their day-to-day and this is what they do all the time, just like most other people in profession, we kind of start taking things for granted and we assume. that because this is our common knowledge and this is very obvious to us, that the people around us, the people that we're helping, they're going to be on that same wavelength. They already have this insight and information. And a lot of times, like I said, cancer is a big disease.
It
It's
is.
very prevalent. And we don't always get that individualized attention because they're working. They're just trying to help everybody. And if you don't know to ask the question, a lot of times they don't want to, they don't present information because they just assume that you know.
But you know, it shouldn't be that way.
No. Well,
It should not be that way at all, but it is.
and in a lot of spaces, the doctors don't want to upset the patients. They don't want to cause any extra drama and, to deal with all those things. So they try to kind of easy step around situations and circumstances too. I don't think it's out of malice or intent. It's just that they're in, just work mode. And they're not thinking about, well, you know what? I need to say all of this information because they don't want to overload you. We don't know how different people are going to respond to bad news, and they don't want to be in those difficult situations. So,
But isn't that a part of the job?
as physicians, the body and dealing with the actual body itself is one thing. Sometimes you have people who are very well skilled and trained at how to be a have a bedside manner. We've all got really great doctors who don't have a great bedside manner. They have a skill and they operate in that skill, and that's where it is. But yeah, we went through, he was diagnosed in October of 2019 with cancer, and he transitioned April 16th of 20, just about six time frame, and watching the day to day because I was there with him daily. And even now, when I go back and I look at pictures and I look at stuff, I surprise myself because I didn't realize. Because when you're with somebody every day, you see them changing, you see the different things happening, and some of the stuff is drastic and you realize, but it's not as inherent, it's not as shock as obvious because you're watching the transition happen. Other people who don't have that experience of seeing them regularly, those, they get the bigger shock because they are aware. So I look back on pictures now and I'm like, oh wow. But I had, of course, tunnel vision, and a lot of that is, I think, is, the creator's way of protecting us and giving us that kind of, barrier and safety, because some of those things, if we were really fully aware, we wouldn't be okay. We wouldn't really be able to handle it. But we went through, going to chemo treatments, adjusting lifestyle. We have us at the time our daughter was 7 years old, so trying to deal with a 7-year-old and keeping her emotionally okay with all the changes going on, him kind of coming to terms with the diagnosis and the just the reality that he may not be here. So the person who is sick has to go through their grieving process. It has to go through their time processing what's happening. And us as the caregivers and the fixers that we are, we're trying to throw everything but the kitchen sink at it to stop it. And it's a hard time sometimes to accept that the realities of life is that, we all have to go. We don't have control over everything, but I do find solace in knowing that, God does not allow any of us to transition unless our purpose has been served.
That's true. Now, let me ask you this. While you were the caregiver, you mentioned you were a caregiver for your mother as well as your fiance. Did you have help?
I was lucky enough with my mother to have family members with me. I have a younger sister who was helpful. So, we were able to kind of tag team out on some of these hospital stays. Her siblings who were here, they were also available to kind of step in and do and sit with her. So I did have a lot of help with her, with my fiance. His family members had been kind of scattered out, so we didn't have a lot of support in that space. And unfortunately, his cancer happened during COVID, so that was a whole nother barrier because, we get the COVID diagnosis. So unfortunately, in his end stages, in his last hospital stay, we were under lockdown. The hospitals were locked down. So the family was not able to do what we would normally be able to do in that kind of situation where, when a person is sick, everybody can kind of rally there and be at
Right.
the hospital and take those turns and be there to interact.
Right.
I was relying on calls and updates from the nurses. Yeah, he went in on a Sunday and I took him. Like I said, I was so oblivious to how sick he really was because we were actually told in December of 2019, we would have 2 to 2.5 years. So my mindset was we still had time.
Right.
And of course, with me as a therapist, when I'm seeing a lot of the decline, I'm chalking it up to it's depression that comes from just him dealing with the illness, not
Right.
realizing that it was a lot more of the physical just aspect of his transition and his body shutting down. I had on the rose-colored glasses on a lot of stuff, and it was protectionary for me because our minds won't even let us absorb a lot of stuff, especially in these kind of crisis situations, because we can't handle it. But he went into the hospital on a Sunday morning. I'm thinking, oh, they're gonna go in and check him, give him some fluids, run a
Right.
couple of scans just to put his mind at ease, and he'll be home. And that'll be it to, getting the notification that, okay, no, he's not gonna come home. This is a situation, this problem is happening, that problem is happening, and he's way sicker than what we were realizing. We weren't able to have communication with him because he was too weak to talk. And so we were reliant on just the daily calls from the doctor or the nurse at the time to give the updates about what was happening. We then, that Wednesday, the doctor started talking about him transitioning to possibly hospice and the reality that, he did not have very much time left and to focus on your quality of life, not the quantity. And over a course of hours, it went from him being sent home under hospice care to him being not strong enough for hospice to be sent home, but to maybe be sent to a hospice facility, to then them just saying, no, we're going to allow you to come in and be with him so he doesn't have to pass along.
Oh, wow.
And so, and I'm grateful for the opportunity that they
Right.
did allow me in because so many families at that time, because of COVID, were not allowed to be with their family members. Even if it wasn't COVID related, they just weren't allowed to get into the hospitals to be with them. But they did allow me to come in. I had the opportunity to, to sit with him and be with him in those last hours and video call all the family members so that they could see him. And at that point in time, he was already transitioning out. So he wasn't speaking. He wasn't communicating. He was just there. Of course, the hearing is the last thing to go. So, everybody was able to say what they needed to say for him to hear it, but he just wasn't able to give him the responses back for that
Right.
actual complete closure. I was able to be with him, pray with him, pray over him, and, hold his hand as he transitioned out. And as you mentioned, the realities of what happens when we lose loved ones.
Oh, yeah.
Every family member, he doesn't take it the same way. They don't behave in the same way. And a lot of times, honestly, people not being able to deal with the emotion of the loss, it stirs up guilt for a lot of people that shoulda, coulda, wouldas. And I feel bad because I didn't. And it comes out in a manner that not always pleasant and not always, their best foot forward. And, again, as a therapist, I'm out here going into professional mode. And even that, even giving people grace in those moments of understanding, okay, you talking kind of crazy and it is reckless, but I understand you hurt. It's hard to put your feelings to the side sometimes.
So I know that we've talked about it and about extending grace to others.
Yes.
Were you able to extend grace to yourself during that time?
During the time, I was in such a space of just taking care of business, managing, handling, and taking care of. I was very much aware that he was, relying on me to be strong. to say the encouraging words, to say the prayers, to speak and be like, okay, you're going to be okay, and to be comforting and consoling in that way. And afterwards, when the reality of taking care of the business, taking care of the services and all that stuff, when the reality of just life itself hits, after all the business is taken care of, that's when the hard work happens. That's when the reality is kind of setting in. So, you know, processing, a lot of processing. You know, I had to get counseling services as well to kind of help me process out.
But let's stop there, because, you know, that's something that I think is great that you just mentioned, because, you know, you are a licensed professional counselor and you experienced this loss that was very significant in your life. And you decided to take out some time to just see about yourself. So that's beautiful.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that as caregivers, we typically, you know, we lose because we're always taking care of our loved one. And there's a lot of guilt that comes with it because you get angry, you get frustrated, you get overwhelmed. And, you know, yes, I need to care for mama. Yes, I need to make sure this is taken care of. But you get tired.
Get tired. I like to share with you what really led me to the counseling. So I had my mother had passed, and there was just all kind of just drama that was coming from relatives. There was a relative. And this relative, I guess, was processing the way that they processed. I remember flying up north because they had stated how they never had a vegan meal. This is where I was at mentally. I got off the plane, grabbed the rental car, went to the grocery store, purchased this food from the grocery store, came over to this relative's house and cooked for them, cleaned for them, cooked for them. And this relative also took out. And my friend said to me, Lisa, you know, what are you doing? Why did you do those things? But my mind was still on the go because I was still like very much used to taking care of my mama and waiting on her hand and foot. But within that, here was this person that was older than my mother, a relative that had experienced what it was to lose a mother and father, but there was no love and kindness there for me. I was taking care of them. And then on top of that, then started the conversations. One of the conversations had, and mind you, my mom had not been gone for even 7 days yet. I was up north, and this relative said, oh, well, you know, yeah, your mother said, you know, you're always really busy and doing things, and you need someone to cover you and just someone to talk to. So, you know, I'll be there for you. 10 minutes later, that the conversation changes, and she says, your mother said it was beautiful down there where you are. She said that the sun was always shining and the clouds looked like they were organic. I'm just going to move down there into the house. And, you know, it's time for me to live. It's time for my new beginning because I didn't live life and I got to live and I got to have a new beginning. And she went, this person, this relative went on and on. And I told them and I said, with all due respect, I am not in a place. We talked about this. I said, I'm not in a place mentally to hear anyone discuss their new beginning and moving into the house that I had built for my mother as a gift. You know, when my mother hasn't even been gone for 7 days yet. I said, please. However, there was no respect there for me. And that conversation, it kept going the whole weekend. I decided not to stay with this person anymore. I stayed with another relative, and they began to just text me all of, you know, oh, well, you know, I'm going to check and probably end my lease and coming. And mind you, I never even invited this person. How are you just going to move into, you know, my house without receiving an invitation? Crazy. And it was when I was in the airport and I was about to fly back down south, I received another text, and if you know me, you know that I keep receipts, so easily could verify this. And when I received the text, and this person was still going on, I was in the airport, and I literally just started shaking uncontrollably. My arms were shaking, my legs were shaking, I was shaking. I wasn't, not that I was upset, I didn't know what I was feeling. I felt like I literally felt like I was about to lose my mind, that I was about to break down because there was just so much going on. And I just said, I have to go. I have to go to counseling. And that's how I found Miss Pashonda Pugh here. And but you know, to your point, what I think is great is that you said, you know, I went through this. This was a significant loss, and I decided, although I am a licensed professional, I decided I needed someone to talk to. So she didn't wait. What that means, y'all, podcast family, she didn't wait until she had the tremors like me in the airport. She decided to make sure to see about herself right away.
Well, you know, I had the experience when I lost my mother in February of 2016. And of course, like I said, I was doing. And I experienced it where people, because I was the strong one, because I was together, and because they just had such faith in me, you know, people didn't really ever stop and say, well, how are you? Or take in consideration the changes and how I would be doing, because you just assume you're okay and you assume that you can handle it. And if and, you know, and they're looking for you to come to them and say, hey, this is wrong with me, or I can't handle this.
And it doesn't work like that.
I tried to keep going until I had my first panic attack, and I had my first, you know, real crisis episode May of 2016, because I was just taking it on so much, and I was just walking and doing and not really caring for myself. So this time around, I was a lot better prepared and a lot more aware. It's just that, you know, in this space, I was not only just thinking about me, but I was thinking about, you know, our child and, you know, her being so young and what was happening to her. And like I said, when we were in the middle of COVID and everybody was isolated, that was a grace, and that was actually a beneficial thing because you didn't have to do all the entertaining that you have to do when people pass, and you didn't have to worry about making sure everybody else was comfortable.
I want to stop right there because that's also deep too, because I experienced that as I just said in my story. I got off of the plane, flew up north. Right away, I go to the grocery store. I buy things because this relative has said they've never had a certain type of meal before. And then I go to their house and I cook for them. And I just lost my mom. I just watched her die. And I'm trying to take care of you. You know, and so when you are, to your point, when you are a caregiver, you get stuck in that. I don't want to say stuck, but you get into that routine where that routine then becomes life.
Well, I think it's because when you're recognized and you're seen as a strong individual, people take it for granted. That's why I am not a fan of being called strong anymore. I am fragile. You know, be careful with me. Treat me gently, because I do need, you know, and it's just don't take it for granted or assume that because I'm not falling out and because I'm not just, you know, passed out in the floor somewhere, that I'm okay. You know, and I learned that it is okay when someone says, how are you, to say, I'm not okay. You know, we are, you know, trained, and we're kind of, you know, groomed to always say, oh, I'm fine. I'm okay. I'm all right. And it's okay to not be okay.
It's okay not to be okay.
And it shakes people up when you say it the first couple of times, so they're not expecting for you to say, I'm not good today. But it's the reality is being honest, because now you are aware. You can't say that you didn't know. You know, I'm not good. I'm not all right. And it's safe to say I'm not all right. We don't have to always struggle alone. And it's the therapist in me sitting back and really kind of paying attention to people and listening and observing everything. The reality is, most people, what seems to be, or you would think would be, common sense is not common. And
That
people are very much about self a lot of the times, and it's not intentional. They just automatically, if the relationship that they had was a certain way, they're focused on how that relationship was with them. They're not thinking about how it's hurting somebody else or how you're feeling. because we're all very self-centered people. And we do focus on how we feel and how it's impacting us.
Right.
It's sad. It really, and it can make you really feel alone, especially, as your story is being told, you are sitting here watching and seeing and how, the mistreatment and, your mother be,
Right.
taken advantage of and overlooked. So of course, you're going to be angry. And you want to come in and defend, and it's going to be even 10 times worse because, she's sick. And, the transition is happening. And it makes everything, amplified. And unfortunately, a lot of those family members that, did not honor her in the way that you think she, or you feel that she should have been honored, they're not even aware.
Right.
They're
Wow.
not even aware that they were, that their behavior was out of pocket.
I made them aware.
Well, I know you made them aware, but
But
you
you know
didn't
what,
get them to accept it.
right, and even in that, when I have to, I'm going to share this with you all. This is part of my session. So I was talking to Miss Pashonda, and I'm in there, I'm just bawling my eyes out, and I'm telling her about the various things that I went through dealing with relatives, and she gave me some homework. I'm telling about the homework. She says, "You know, Talisa," she said, "you need to write down how you feel. You know, address them, like write them a letter. Write down how you feel, write down what happened." And then I was told, she said, Pashanda said, "Put it in an envelope, seal it, and just put it in your Bible." And I'm like, okay, I can, you know, I said I could do that. So I got home and I really thought about how I felt, you know, how my mother felt, because that was the thing when certain relatives really showed who they were to her, it hurt her. It hurt her. She was already passing, and it made me angry. Because for the people that know me, you all know how crazy I have always been about my mama. That was my girl. So I did what she said. I wrote a letter, and then I wrote some things out, and I put it in an envelope. And then I started thinking at the time, I'm like, you know what? I'm 34 years old. Who gonna check me? You know, who gonna check me? I'm grown. You know, what are you gonna say? No, you can't come to, you know, the family cookout or the barbecue or Thanksgiving. I'm not gonna call you and wish you a happy birthday. Did you ever call me and wish me a happy birthday? Did I ever get a Christmas card from you? Was I ever at your cookout? The answer is no. So I took that letter, and I, you know, some other re relatives I, you know, blood relatives I reached out to, and I sent it off. And what I did with no profanity or anything like that, but I addressed them as an adult, as a woman. And that's something that, in my belief, they were not used to, because they knew me as little Lisa. But within that, they were not able to take responsibility and tried to hide and some other things. But I remember going back to Pashonda for my next session. And she says, "So how did it go? Did you do the homework?" I said, "Yes." I said, I sat down and I wrote this out. I wrote that. And you know, knowing me, I typed it up. So I wanted to make sure it was nice. It was professional. It was like reading a business letter. I had a template. And I said I did it, and I put it in an envelope. And then I'm like, I talked to my cousin. I used her address, and I shipped it off to them so that so that they could read it. And she said, "What?" And I said, "And I made copies. So this is what I said." And so then I shared the homework with her. I had to share that because it tickled me. That was funny. But you know, that was actually the beginning, and to really just express, you know, how I felt. Because when you go through the things that we go through as caregivers, usually we bottle it up, we keep it inside. There's a lot that happens when you're taking on the role of a caregiver. To Pashonda's point, we need to be able to let those feelings and those expressions and those emotions out. I'm grateful for that homework, and I would say that I, you know, did I pass? Did I?
It was a creative end to it, As long as we still made a copy of it, made it to the Bible, we still okay.
Well, all right. Let me ask you this. As a caregiver, what are some of the best practices that you can share with others from your experience?
One of the biggest things that we need to do when we are the caregiver is stop and be aware and just take in the moments. You know, when we're helping a family member who is terminally ill, you know, we already know how severe the sickness is and it's going to be a long-standing situation. Accessing the care that's available, the help and assistance that's available, it is okay to ask for help. Try as many options as possible to get the help. I know a lot of people get in circumstances where they don't have a lot of assistance, or the person that they're caring for is difficult and they don't want a lot of different people to come around. So we have to kind of be creative, but really taking time for yourself, getting with somebody, anybody who will listen to us. And it's okay to talk about the same stuff over and over again. It's okay to get there and have a space to have somebody as a therapist or a friend who will be there just listening to let you get it out and not make you feel bad for what you're saying or what you're feeling, and not, you know, tell you you're wrong for what you're feeling, you know, because we're going to go through such a huge range of emotions. A lot of times when we're in those situations, especially when we're dealing with facing and coming to terms with the loved one that we have, we're going to lose them. You know, we're not ourselves. We're not going to necessarily be professional or polite a lot of the time. So that's helpful. Making sure, like I said, taking care of yourself is hard to do, you know, because we get in our routine and we're so focused on the other, on our loved one. But taking care of yourself, trying to get at least some time away if you can, trying to get some type of sleep. You know, a lot of times, like with your situation, you know, you have to sleep when mama sleeps. You just can't be on your regular routine. You know, trying to go to work and trying to juggle. And it's hard when you're trying to maintain your regular life and take care of the responsibilities that you have. And still, you have a loved one at home that, you know, needs around the clock care. So it's, you know, trying as much as you can to ask the questions, ask for help, and taking it one day at a time.
That's great. What would you say was the one of the most challenging for you, some of the most challenging issues that you encountered?
Being in that space where you're looking at your loved one being treated in a way that you feel like is wrong, and dealing with that because you can't fight every fight. You can't fight everybody.
Now, let me ask you this. When you say treating your loved one wrong, are we talking relatives? Are we talking medical
Relatives,
staff?
friends, well, even with the medical staff, because you have to be very careful, you know, when you're talking to people, you can't go in, you know, it's not helpful to go in and curse the doctors out and do all of that because why? They're
Why?
people still. Are they going to do anything to hurt them? No, but are they going to go out of their way to overly help them? No. Knowing how to actually ask the questions or present it in the way that you need to present it. But like I said, it's just the hardest place is being in a place where you start to see and you're hurt because you see the person that you love being hurt or being mistreated. And that's a really angry place. And, you know, people don't even realize the things that they do that is just really kind of disrespectful and hurtful. But what I found is, ironically enough, our family members that we're caring for, because they're in that space of the big picture is their life is coming to an end. That's the big picture. So they're going to be a lot more forgiving than we are because we're angry and because we're not there. And their focus is like, I don't care about that. I'm worried about being here and whatever. I don't care. I don't care that they didn't do this, and I'm just not even focusing on it because I don't need to lose time there. And so for us being the people and you know, us being the people left behind. You know, you will always have that vision and that, you know, experience of your mother's transition. You will always have that last day, you know, so you saw her, you were that
Right.
last person. So we carry those things, and those are hard things. And what I learned is we have to find the beauty.
Yeah, the beauty in it. And
Go ahead.
I'll say this to just chime in quickly. You know, how I look at it is my mother watched me take my first breath. And I was blessed enough to watch her take her last breath. And prior to her taking her last breath, I was able to tell her how much I loved her and thank her for everything that she did. And that's something to me that's worth more than gold.
Oh,
It's worth
yeah.
more than $1 billion.
Yeah. And you know what? Even with your situation, those 9 months that you were, your mother was still up north and you were down here and you were trying to take care of everything, and
Right.
she didn't tell you how bad she was, and she didn't tell you how sick she was, you know, it was more so in that one of those last loving gestures to protect you. Because
Yeah.
she didn't want you to worry, and she didn't want you to be upset, and she didn't want to make it harder for you than
Right.
what it was going to be. So, you know, when she knew and she was aware that, you know, her time was coming to an end, that's why she was ready to come home, come back with you, and let everything else go.
You know, and I'll say that too for, you know, caregivers. I really believe in my heart of hearts that they know. Remember showing my mother her house. She passed before it was finished, but she did get a chance to see it. I took her to it, and I took her to the neighborhood, and I, you know, took her around, and I took her to our river, and I, you know, our dock, and I started explaining the reasons why. And all she kept saying is, "Wow, Lisa, you doing this for me? All of this is for me? Wow, this is big. You're doing this for me?" And I'm just like, "Well, Mom, yeah, remember, like, you're the one who knows the floor print of the house, the outline. You say carpet, you wanted these color cabinets." I said, remember, like, that was all for, you know, for this. And her response was, "Wow, you know, my baby, I'm watching my baby. And this is your house, is this. It's just your house is beautiful." And I kept saying, "Our house, this is for you." I kept trying to get her to say our, like, "This is a gift for you." And in my mind, I thought I could get her here, she would get better. And then after a year or two, I would decide if she wanted to keep the house, it's fine. If she wanted to come with me out of the state into another state, that's good. Like, I had plans. I had planned it all in my mind, but that wasn't it. But they knew. And one more thing I'd like to say, when, because you hit on this too, people that are only able to view things from their standpoint. I've learned this, when you can't see past yourself, when the only person that you see is yourself and it's your experience, you end up hurting others that are around you.
And it's unfortunate being aware, being cognizant of what's happening.
Right.
You know, a lot of people don't. They don't take time to reflect. They don't take time to really sit back and take themselves out and say, okay, well, what was that person's point of view or what their relationship was? Because we just, a lot of folks just don't think that way. It
They
is
don't.
unfortunate, but you know, that's where, when you talked about forgiveness, forgiving people who aren't here, forgiving people, even if they are here, because it's about freeing yourself. It's about understanding.
That's it.
It's about the understanding and you finding peace for yourself. Because, you know, being angry helps. Being angry is okay. Being angry, you know, gets us through a lot of tough situations, but it has its place.
That's right.
You know, but we can't stay in that spot forever. Because sometimes when you really sit back and you look at it, it don't always end well. And
Right.
it don't, and, you know, and being a person of faith and knowing, you know, how God moves and how God works. You know, your mother's doing her deeds and in her heart. And none of that stuff is, you know, how they treated her is not going to go, you know, in vain.
Right.
It comes back around.
Yeah,
You know,
you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
but she, you know, like I said, hearing about her and the stories that you were able to tell me about her as you went through your sessions and processed everything. I could tell she was a beautiful person and that she had a beautiful spirit and she transitioned and passed on a lot of that stuff to you. And that's one of the things that you have to hold on to is like the reality of who they were.
Right.
You know, the greatness of who they were just as parents, as people. So it was new to you. It wasn't new to her. She was already aware how those people were. She just didn't, she was okay. She
She was
knew
okay.
how to handle
Yep. She did.
it.
And that's awesome. Well, Miss Bashonda Pugh, I thank you for your time on today and for this open-hearted, transparent discussion. Thank you for sharing your experiences with us. Thank you for also taking out the time to interview me on my experience. And podcast family, again, I'm going to have Pashonda Pugh give her handles, and I will also make sure to link them at the bottom of this video. So if you would like to reach out to her and talk with her, make an appointment with her, you'll be able to do that.
Again, Facebook, Instagram is Life Transitions Wellness Center. My website is www.lifetransitionswc.com. And you can also reach by phone. My office number is 843-212-2059. So I'm able to service anyone in the state of North or South Carolina at this time. Coming, other states coming soon. But
Yep,
for right
other states
now,
coming
North or
soon.
South. Yes.
Yes. So even if you are in another state, still feel free to reach out because if she gets a high number, I'm sure that she'll also acquire
Extend
whatever that
the
is. Right.
licensures.
Yes,
Extend
definitely.
the licensures out. But
Yes.
even, and I will be putting out information, we're gonna have, thanks to Miss Talisa and her urgings, my own YouTube channel. And so
Yes.
that is going to be also Life Transitions. So
Yeah.
we'll have content out and you'll be able to kind of get some insights from me and a little bit of the stuff that I'm able to share with my clients in practice. But I
Yeah.
do want to thank you so much for just even allowing me to help walk with you through your difficult time and trusting me. Because that's a hard thing to do, to walk into a room and trust a stranger
Yes,
with
that
your
is.
feelings and with your heart. So I thank you for trusting me and just for allowing me to help you as much as I can.
Well, thank you very much. And again, thank you because it was definitely God sent. And even being able to connect with you 6 years later and have this discussion, and for you to be open enough to come and give your time for this purpose on this podcast, I sincerely appreciate it.
Thank you.